You're listening to Around Comics, episode 257, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is normally recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. But this week, we're coming to you from our other favorite store in Chicago. That's right, Challengers Comics in Conversation, located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue, also Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. It's just a block south of the Western stop on the Blue Line, if you do travel that way. So if you're in the area, come and visit this wonderful store.
We were under the impression that you had to be on Western if you were a comic store in Chicago.
All of the comic book stores are on Western.
It seems like it. Yeah.
All of them are.
The ones that matter anyway. So, hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this panel. First of all, as always, is Mr. Tom Caters.
Hi. Could you turn down my headphones? Sure. It's a little loud. Sorry. I had a good day.
The controls are right by me. Fantastic.
Yeah. And I had a really good day besides that.
There you go.
Oh, it's perfect.
All right. Wonderful.
Yeah, sorry for that.
For those technical...
We're having a post-show meeting during the show.
Isn't this just the sound check run-through?
Damn it, Chris. My headphones are too loud. Next is the proprietor of Challengers Comics and Conversation. Return guest. Multiple times you've been on the show.
That's right. Multiple times. Fantastic.
I know. You're like a steady date now. Mr. Patrick Brower.
And I totally put out. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, that's
it's
why
like
we come
a booty
here.
Call.
It is. It's a comic shop booty call.
When I say having me, you know what I mean.
You know.
And our next guest... Which you're just a guest now.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just a guest. There's no editorial
I don't think
control.
My microphone's on.
There you go. The prodigal son has returned, Mr. Brian Salazar.
I'm here under duress. I was tricked into coming here tonight.
You were tricked.
I was told there was a special guest that I'd actually have interest in talking to.
Oh, so you don't want to talk to me? Is that what you're saying?
Patrick. I don't know how that...
Wow. Here I was. I thought it was a huge honor to be on the same show as you and to be introduced before you, but now I'm just going to look at you, Chris, when I talk.
That's fine.
It's like, you must I thought it was Halloween, but you're in a full Bears uniform here in your Dick Buckus.
How do you talk with that mouth guard in, too? I don't understand what that's
years
for.
Of training.
The helmet gets in the way of the microphone. Yes, we were supposed to have a special guest tonight, but we had some scheduling issues. But next week...
Son of a bitch!
You may get to hear a very special Chicago-themed guest.
Willie Gault.
Yes, the old Willie.
He was my favorite.
Willie Gault. Get your Sun-Times medallions.
Willie Gault was my favorite bear on the 85 Bears. Of all of the bears on that team.
Really, Walter Payton just didn't cut the mustard?
No, I loved Willie Gault.
Would you have a number two? I mean, Willie Gault is a pretty strange number one. No offense if he's listening. I'm sure he's one of your regular listeners.
Matt Sui is... He was awesome.
White pullback. White pullback, of course.
Probably the fridge.
Pro's
the
pro. Fridge. The fridge.
But, he wasn't even my favorite G.I. Joe character.
The fridge. Sergeant Slaughter in the fridge.
Sergeant Slaughter was my favorite Bears player and favorite G.I. Joe.
And wrestler.
Yeah, he did. He was all three. Great place. Well,
before we sidetrack too horribly here, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades is your source for all things collected, from trade paperbacks to deluxe hardcovers, omnibus editions, absolute editions, essentials, showcases, and more. If it is collected, it is at InStockTrades.com, and it's all available at a wonderful 30 to 47% off the cover price, and all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. And speaking of 47% off the cover price, that's the discount for our book club selection, which is Hellblazer Dangerous Habits. You can get that for the low price of $7.94.
When do we get together to talk about that?
Maybe next Tuesday.
All right. We'll see. I've read it. I'm good.
You're set?
Let's go now.
You're set? All right. And
does Sergeant Slaughter know that we're reading it for next week?
I'll tell you what, Megan, he sure does, so you don't want to cross him any one more time.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive, and he still wrestles.
Does he really?
Yes. Wow. Like he's actually in better shape now than he was back in the 80s.
Has he been promoted at all from sergeant, or is he still...
No, you know what? He didn't line them.
Captain Slaughter.
Captain Slaughter.
He was Commodore Slaughter for a while, but it just didn't fit right with...
Admiral Slaughter.
Sergeant Major Slaughter.
Admiral Slaughter.
Well, first of all, Sal, welcome back. Hey. I know that folks, whenever you had announced that you were retiring, staying on the football theme, I guess that would make you our Brett Favre.
Oh yeah, I waffle. I just come back and
waffle them back and forth.
But, or with the wrestling theme, he's our Mick Foley.
Okay,
just wanted to keep that going. Jesus. You know, with the wrestling theme going since it was brought up before.
Everything.
It's the money, the dollars. Just keeps throwing at me, and I can't stay away.
You can't stay away.
I can't. My family needs that kind of cash. I'm still around. I'm just not.
I know. I see you every day.
Yeah. Well,
it's not like you died.
No, I'm still here.
No,
I still
but
exist.
A little part of the listening audience did.
No, nobody misses me. It's I might pop in once in a while. Who knows?
It's fine. I got emails from people and tweets and uh-huh.
Show's so much better.
Is Sal okay? I'm just like Sal told me 6 weeks ago he was. This is not a big deal for
He's
me
been
anymore.
Threatening this every yeah. episode. Yeah, since it's the beginning.
The last 2 years, basically, I don't Constant know what I was threat. Doing. But yeah.
Well, I tell you what. Let's talk about some comics and see what's been coming out here.
So you see why you quit now?
Yeah. I was like, oh shit! I didn't know there was going to be a test.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, why don't you lead us off?
I want to talk about.
Oh, music yeah. for. The, yeah. Sorry. Music for this episode is featuring Supergrass. So
well, there you go.
Yep, we'll Supergrass for this one.
Well, thank you.
All right, Tom.
I want to talk about The Great Ten, number one, written by Tony Bedard with art by Scott McDaniel and
Andy Owens.
Andy Owens. Thank you. I was going to have to look it up. It's based on the Chinese superhero characters that Grant Morrison came up with at some point, I think in 52. It was in there, and now they've finally gotten around to having a story focus on them, and I found it to be quite a pleasant
Final
surprise.
Crisis, right?
Yeah, or something. No, that was 52. The Japanese ones. Were in
oh,
Final Crisis.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, see, that is my DC ignorance, which I'm really trying to catch up. I only have about 40 years more of continuity.
You don't know about DC Universe China?
Well, whenever they
that,
whenever
it
they
exists.
Get, well, I
that's
mean,
what the C stands for, isn't it?
There's a big need
Detective
for that pocket
China,
time
that
we were talking
that
about.
Was their
Detective
name?
China. Yes.
When they introduced these characters in 52, I had no idea that they weren't existing characters. Is this was 52 the first time that
yeah
that, because then
wherever they maybe it wasn't 52 but whenever they first showed up a couple of years ago was
okay
the first time.
Because then one of the characters came into Checkmate
yeah.
And so go ahead
oh thank you sorry. And I really enjoyed how Tony Bedard sort of came up with a story to give some context to the characters, because previously they've been sort of seen as a monolithic group that just kind of they all show up and you didn't
they're
really see a lot
town.
Of all
it,
of them.
It's difficult to have a story with them because it takes half the book to get all of their names
yeah.
out. But they do have the best names of
oh,
any
totally
superhero
sweet
characters
names, such
at all.
As, let me crack this open, August General in Iron, Thundermind, Accomplished Perfect Physician, who's the star of you know mm-hmm. the story, Celestial Archer, Immortal Man in Darkness, you know stuff.
I think
like
it was August General in Iron who was in Checkmate. Yeah. He took over one of the Checkmate positions.
Yeah, and he features heavily in this issue, but the real star of it is the Accomplished Perfect Physician, as we get his backstory and how he fits in to this group. And it's not just like, oh, they're Chinese superheroes and they're all, it's like the Justice League where they're all friends with each other or something like that. Instead, it's a competition between all of them where the physician is sort of almost a Robin Hood-like figure in China, and you see how the others line up politically. Either, you know, they're sympathetic to him or they're against him, or, you know, what their function is within China. Are they just a propaganda machine? Are they actually going to try and help people? Do they just suppress revolts, or is there something else there for them to do? So it does sort of tie into our views of what the issues of China are, you know, like human rights violations, Tibet, stuff like that. So it ties in, you know, to real world type views that we have of China, but then it also has totally sweet shit, like a giant dude made out of like rusty iron. So, and it's the best sort of comic books that happens.
And I like Tony Bedard. He's one of those guys that just kind of seems to be under that top crust of writers. But the stuff that he does is like Rebels is just so.
He's one of those guys who almost got buried by Countdown.
Yeah.
Well, he's a guy that was always given a canceled book and said, hey, you have 4 issues left. Just take it to its grave. Do whatever you want to do or whatever. And I think it took a book like Rebels where he got to finally say, this is what I want to do. I mean, he's always been in a situation where
it's a number one issue?
It's not a one shot. There'll be another one.
There's going to be more after this.
He's not just following the storyline set up to him, or he doesn't have to take with the reins and go. He gets to decide, hey, this is what these characters are. This is what it's about. And he really showcases that in
before
Rebels.
We kill them all off.
Yeah. With The Great Ten being a 10-issue series, do you think that they're going to have a focus on each character individually as they go through?
Maybe. That would be cool. I think it would be, if they have serious plans on using the characters more, I think it would be an awesome way to handle that, to sort of give them all a little bit more depth. I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed the issue. I just sort of picked it up because I liked the idea, but I was like, oh, I'm interested to see how the rest of these characters interact with each other.
I always thought it was going to be the DC version of Immortal Weapons, the Iron Fist stuff, but they're not. It's actually, you know, as Tom says, it's all about how they relate to each other, and they don't have to get along. It's okay.
No. And the sort of the accomplished physician sort of having to compromise what he thinks is right to participate in this much larger thing, but we see how he got to where he is. It wasn't by the most. Stereotypical like hero picking up a mantle type thing. He was very much forced into what he did based on mistakes that he made. So it's very interesting.
Very cool.
And the McDaniel art's pretty sweet too.
Now, are they
the idea of a superhero's punishment?
Yeah, this is as he's eternally making up for something that he did.
Are they a government sanctioned group or are they vigilante sort of?
Well, that's sort of part of the story is that they are a government group, but there's people within it that don't necessarily agree with everything that the government wants them to do. So it's sort of an uneasy truce and how it functions and what's going on. And it from this first issue, it seems like it could fall apart at any point, depending on what they're asked to do and what they do once they get there.
How do you control the most powerful members of your citizens?
Cookies.
Citizens-y.
Give them cookies.
Yep, cookies. Cookie. That's... Spoilers.
That's how I got here, actually.
That's how
I was promised some cookies.
We just left a trail of cookies.
That's how they got me to do this show.
A trail of beers.
It only took like a month before the cookie stopped, though. And then it's like, oh, don't worry. Next time.
We'll get some
more cookies. Yeah.
With you, it was a few cases of Miller High Life.
Exactly. Just took some beers.
Ooh, Camo Cans. Ooh, Camo Cans. Love you all night long. I'm a baby. Well, this is no surprise. One of my favorite books of the last couple of weeks is Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth, and you can't forget Lee Lowridge on colors on Stumptown from Oni Press. And Stumptown has been a book that Greg has been talking about for 2, maybe 3 years as kind of his. Homage to the PI TV shows that he grew up watching, like Magnum PI and Simon.
I was sick
Simon.
Of him talking about it.
I know. It was like seriously
write it.
Just get it. Just put it out. It.
Well, you know, but he was wrapping up with Queen and Country.
Excuses,
and you had the all the Whiteout stuff. And then if you haven't noticed, he's been doing a lot at DC, and he was adamant about when Stumptown was going to be launched, they weren't going to come out with a first or second issue and then let it hang out there. They apparently have all 4 issues are in the can or nearly in the can. There will be no delays.
Fell in
on
what?
This.
I'm sorry.
So Stumptown is going to come out on schedule. And,
are you guaranteeing that, Chris?
Yes, that is a personal guarantee from me that Stumptown.
Chris
Gregory
Neesman will make sure whatever happens, Stumptown will be coming out on time.
No,
I will personally guarantee that when that doesn't, or if it doesn't, that I will make sure that Chris pays for his guarantee by kicking the balls.
You, yeah, we're out kicking the balls.
Greg, do you hear that?
One, or is that for every
week viewer? That it is late?
Oh, all right.
Multiple kicks in the balls if this doesn't come out. Why I like this is a lot of the reason why Greg wrote it is that there are a lot of different detective and PI books that have come out in the last few years, but they always have a supernatural tilt to them or something that there's a supernatural element to it. You know, the psychic PI, you know, and we see this even on TV.
Vampires. You
know? There's something just kind of not of this world, and there's very few just hard boiled PI books that are out there, you know, and even, you know, once again to TV, there's very few PI shows that don't have some sort of weird little hook to them,
yeah.
And that's what I liked about Stumptown. It's just a PI book. This is
no tricks, no gimmicks.
It's the main character.
The only gimmick is that it's awesome.
The only it's an only book, which usually means that it's black and white, but this is colored, and Lee Loridge is a fantastic colorist, did a great job with this. And the main character, big surprise, since it's a Greg Rucka book, is a female PI,
what?
Of course. I know, big shocker. Man. But she's kind of the prototypical down-on-your-luck PI.
When's Greg going to just get that operation?
When is it going to happen?
But down on your luck, PI. You know, just taking a job to make ends meet, keep her car running, and you know, help support her younger brother who has Down syndrome, so special needs brother that she's trying to support, and she's a great PI, but she has a few vices, and
as all great PIs do.
She has a little bit of a gambling problem, and
it's not a problem when she wins,
which doesn't happen very often.
Get it all back,
unfortunately. So the first story kind of kicks off when the daughter of the manager of the casino, it's an Indian run casino, a daughter disappears, and well, Dex, the main character, has a pretty outstanding tab at the casino, so this is her chance to wipe the tab out if she can recover the daughter. And the name of the first arc, which really harkens back to the Rockford Files. Sorry, I just ripped this out of Sal's hands.
Give it to me.
The name of the first arc is The Case of the Girl Who Took Her Shampoo But Left Her Mini, Part 1, which is just such a...
right out of 70s TV.
Absolutely. So, yeah, if you're a fan of 70s, 80s PI TV or you know, hard-boiled PI novels, Stumptown is a great detective book.
It has a little bit more... you know, I saw a lot of people... compare it to Criminal, mm-hmm. but I would say that it has a little bit more of like a wit to it, not like a, like that Criminal's dumb, but there's a little more of a twinge of like humor or, you know, a little conversation.
Criminal,
it's not as dark
as Criminal. On the depressing side.
Yes, Criminal is darker.
Looks like Criminal as far as artistically.
Well, artistically, I think it was like... great that it looks a lot like either Michael Lark or Michael Gatos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it could have gone
some
in a bunch
Sean Phillips
directions.
In there. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're right. It's and I think the last time we talked with
it's a little
Greg,
snappier.
He had talked about the difference between, you know, it's like, oh, you're doing your Criminal, and Criminal is really kind of Brubaker's love letter to noir films, and this is really Greg's love letter to 70s and 80s PI TV, you know, Magnum PI, you know, that kind of stuff.
Plus, I don't think Brubaker would want him to say that it's his Criminal, because Criminal doesn't sell as well as he want it to. So you want this to be Rucka's new cash cow.
I tell you,
Rucka's
what,
X-Men.
I picked up that the Criminal. Deluxe edition, that is a beautiful collection for that series. If you've held off on Criminal, the deluxe edition is fantastic.
That's so. a weird book, that Criminal Deluxe edition, because it comes out at different points of the country at different times.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't. Diamond, and I'm getting a little off topic here, but Diamond has been doing things that are a lot more rolling out, like geographical, like it'll start East Coast and head to the West. Or
I noticed that with Parker.
And,
Parker.
Yeah, Parker.
It was available on the West Coast before it was available in the Midwest.
Almost everything is available West Coast first. We got lucky in David Mazzucchelli's Asterios Polyup was available here first,
mm-hmm.
which always, because people say, oh, it's out, I've seen it in place. I'm like, it isn't out yet, it's out next week. But no, it's out, depending on where you are geographically. But
why?
It makes people think that they missed it.
Is it just the warehousing?
I guess. I don't know, because...
So is the criminal hardcover out?
It is out. As of the airing of this episode, it is out. But it is not...
Do you have it in your store, Patrick? That's what I'm asking.
I will not make any guarantees or allusions to it being here or not.
By the time you hear this on your iTunes, it'll be in the store.
Can I go home with a copy tonight? That's what I'm...
You absolutely can, because this is next Monday.
Okay, great.
Yes, come to Challengers, buy a Criminal Definitive Edition Volume 1.
And pick up Stumptown. Good Lord.
Yes.
But speaking of Stumptown, I like the way that it's set so well in Portland, because everyone goes to Portland. Portland is the next big artistic mecca of the world, it seems. But this, never having been there, I really got a feel for what it's about. And granted, you see a lot of the grim and gritty places.
It's kind
of
blue.
It's very blue. Yeah.
And Stumptown is the nickname, one of the nicknames of Portland. So
I didn't even know that.
Yes. The comic book convention out in Portland. It's called Stumptown.
I thought there were just a lot of
tree stumps. Do they have a big tree stump problem there?
A lot of trees.
A lot of paraplegics.
It may have been from the logging, but that's what it's from the logging and what's left the bottom.
Stump, you know, or amputees, so I guess.
Nothing,
I
mean, no trees, just stumps.
It's cool because she has to go find
loggers who cut off their legs.
Trying to get stumps on the ground.
Her investigation leads her to another nearby town, and I can't remember the name of it.
Logtown?
It's
Log City.
Woodville?
Coast City. I think it's Coast City.
Wait, what?
It's something like
and
that.
Which one
came from there? Yeah.
But it's the, I heard on iFanboy did a Don't Miss This podcast with Greg a couple weeks ago, and he explained that in every PI story, there is the town that you set it in, which is real, and then you have the fictional town that you can have all
that you
the
can
really
fuck up.
Yeah, you have all the messed up stuff. Right. In. That's where the
Coast City is where the laser is, the giant laser that they use to shoot to the moon.
That's where the gangland boss is.
It's where the bad casino is and all the crime and everything. Yeah, so I don't want to piss off anybody.
Yeah, well,
especially somewhere you live. You know,
well, the guy that she
Greg Ruck has been banned from.
The guy that she's kind of going to end up locking horns with is the local head of MS-13. So
what? There's spies in this shit now?
No, MS-13. Oh. That's the
what the hell is MS-13?
A really bad gang.
MS-13. Yes.
Masters of Science?
No, what is it? MS. I saw that episode of Gangland.
No wonder.
What the hell is MS? I can't remember what it stands for.
Hyper violent. Latino gang.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So if you want to take the Stumptown reality tour, you can't go to Coast City to find the MS-13. It's not that realistic.
No. So there is a little...
Some fictional...
Yeah.
There are real gangs.
There's been some artistic license.
While we're on Greg Rucka, I'm going to tell my one Greg Rucka story, which I've told you before, but never publicly.
Oh.
Everyone gets to hear this now. It was at a Chicago Comic Con years and years ago, and he was just about to put out another Atticus Kodiak novel called Critical Space. And I was introduced to him by Jan and Jeff Jones at the time, and I said, oh, hey, Greg Rucka, I'm a big fan of your work. I was wondering if you could do me a favor. Would you be willing to sign my advanced reader copy of Critical Space? Because it wasn't in stores yet. He's like, yeah, sure, absolutely. I go, great. Can you give me an advanced reader's copy of Critical Space? He looked at me and said, no, and walked away.
Wow.
He didn't find my question amusing.
He didn't find you amusing at all.
I don't hold it against him. I was being a jerk.
There's one man that you don't want to mess with. It's Greg Rucka.
Yeah, he's going to put you as a character.
Greg, I eventually bought the book. So we're cool.
We're cool now.
No, we're not cool. You didn't sign it.
I want a signed copy.
You owe me Greg Rucka on something.
Well, Patrick, you have the option of talking about any comic that you've read that you have enjoyed or something in the store that people are digging.
I didn't bring anything to... Unprepared.
Unfortunately, we're not surrounded by comics wall to wall.
I'm facing the outside. I want to bring up Superman number 674. No. Actually, so I'll just grab it around the back issues. The most impressed I've been with the book lately was, and this is pretty mainstream, and you can't get more popular than this, and it's not a Siren from the outside.
Welcome to Chicago.
It's actually Superman Secret Origin. I'm loving that book. I think that it's firing on all cylinders, to use that cliche. it is yet another retelling of Superman's origin. Oh, who needs that? No, it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more streamlined. It makes sense to what they're doing now. And it's just, it's neat. It's just so much fun and exciting. And it's for a story, for a character that's 60 some odd years old, it's so great to be this excited again by it.
It's fun. We actually, we spent a lot of time on that last week with Don Kramer and Chris Byrne.
Oh,
we
talked right. About that was, I haven't listened to that one yet. Sorry.
Yeah,
guys.
I was going to say. No, you haven't listened to this week's episode.
I just finished the first Don Kramer one. All right, so we'll move past that and just say I agree with everything you guys said because I listened last week and thought it was great.
I need Brainiac 5 I can get is always a good thing.
Yeah.
I need Brainiac 5 being a dick.
And being shown up by someone who's probably a bigger dick like Lightning Lad.
Exactly. It always works. Anytime you can get.
Do you guys find depiction of Clark, I mean, it's obviously Christopher Reeves.
Yeah.
Clark, do you find that weird at all? Or
no, I think it's kind of cool actually that they can pull it off. I like the way it looks. It just kind of like go, aww.
I think it's okay because it's not too Greg Landish.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or it's not too like
if it was
traced photos of
if
Christopher
it was
Lee.
Creepy, and it hasn't gotten to creepy yet. It's just.
I still think of it as an homage.
You understand that for Geoff Johns, his Superman exists in the Donner universe, and that's just
that's
where it is, and it's cool.
The only time I thought it was a little creepy was when he was like really young. It seemed it was just weird. It was just because saw sort of like an adult
Gay
Christopher
Frank's
Reeves.
More kids sometimes their faces are a little strange.
Yeah, no matter what.
So I think that throws it off too. Everyone looks a little older than they are.
I think I said that last time. It's like, you know, even Saturn Girl is like a hot 17-year-old, but she's 17 going on 70.
He does the body right, but the face, specifically Saturn Girl's face, is too old. There's a couple of lines and too many. Yeah.
Yeah.
But everybody else, though, they look and the expressions fit their ages as well. But I don't want to rehash anything we've already done. So
no, it's all right.
Somebody else pick.
Somebody jump. Sal, you got nothing. So you're just here.
I got something I could briefly talk about. I haven't really gotten into it that far because I've only been reading it online. But it's a couple of collections I'm picking up tonight of a webcomic called Wonder Mark.
I think we interviewed them once.
Really?
At Wizard Chicago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
God, that must have been a long time ago.
Yeah.
I never read it. I like ran across the webcomic through a link to something else, and I started reading it.
We didn't interview them on the air, but I remember talking to them. Maybe I'm the only one that talked to
them. I don't know.
It may have been you. Like
it looked,
Seattle
you know, it's funny because it did seem familiar, but I, maybe because I hadn't seen it in so long. But it's called Wonder Mark. It's a online webcomic strip by a guy, David Melky, with an exclamation mark.
Melky!
I know that name.
And I can't talk that much about it just because I haven't really read that much about it. But there are two collections, hardcover collections, really nice, put-together hardcover collections of the webcomic. And it's kind of like he takes...
old Victorian old advertising.
And turns it into comic strips, a lot of times commenting on
very
topical kind of stuff.
Right there.
And a lot of them are hilarious. They're just really funny. And like I said, there's two hardcover collections out of them now. Now, because I have no idea, but is he taking actual artwork
it was
from old...
I don't want to be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what he was doing, the existing artwork that...
So it is existing artwork. He's not recreating he's not creating artwork in the style of like old Victorian.
Maybe he is at this point because he's been doing it for a while.
Right. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'll have to find out more about it. But yeah, it's like
look back in our old episodes.
Yeah. See if we talked to him. Maybe he told us. Yeah.
Oh, that looks cool though.
But it's really funny stuff. I don't even know. I wasn't really prepared
anybody who's
at all.
A fan of Akewood. This is the same kind of humor. While being in a completely different style,
I think WonderMark.com is the website. You can read it all online if you want to. But I decided to pick up the hardcovers just because I want the collections of them and support these guys that are doing it or this guy that's doing it because they're really really funny and clever and however he's doing the artwork, whether he I think he might I don't know I don't know I mean to me. It certainly
if you
looks
look
like
he repeats the same image all the way through panels.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of motion or range of the characters, but there doesn't have to be because it's a dialogue-based strip.
Right.
No, it's cool. It's probably a lot of public domain.
Yeah, old stuff from
and
advertisements.
They're nice collections. They do a nice combination of cloth binding.
The first one is called Beards of Our Forefathers. And then the second one is called Clever Tricks to Stave Off Death. So, I don't know. Check them out online, and you might dig them.
Who publishes?
Dark Horse published the two collections.
Yep. Dark Horse does a nice mix.
They're really funny. And there was the thing, I told Tom about this earlier tonight, that there was on their website, you can order prints of any of their strips. And one of them that I wanted to order for Tom was, it was The Hierarchy of Beards. And it was sort of like a flow chart of the, you know, the higher ranking beards and all that. So I just thought that was a perfectly Tom thing.
Well, you know, I'm always concerned with making sure that people's beards are paid the proper respect in comparison to other people's beards.
And rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean,
you're one of those guys that whenever you have a full beard and you decide to get rid of it, you shave it off in stages, right?
No, I do. I get rid of it very slowly. I respect the beard. It took a long time to get. You shouldn't just rush and get rid of it all
at
once.
What he's doing is once he gets to the full beard, he goes through the hierarchy as he trims down each one.
Yeah. I'm a beard snob.
Putting them in the proper order. Yeah.
Beard snob.
Beard
not
snob.
A beard snob, a beard snob.
I did have another comic book, just kind of a funny anecdote. I was talking to my nephew the other day, and he doesn't read comics or anything, but he digs all the comic book movies, and he was talking about the stuff that's, you know, been announced and coming out and everything, and he said something about Green Lantern, and he's like, do you know who's... He asked me who was playing Green Lantern, and I said, Ryan Reynolds. And he said, oh, really? They're making him white? And I just laughed. And I was like, well, I guess people that don't read the comics, the Green Lantern is the
Justice League cartoon effect, right there. Absolutely.
Yep. I just thought that's hilarious. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
White Green Lantern.
Yeah, that's what it was like. He looked at me like it was like, what the hell is that?
I was under the impression that Ryan Reynolds is going to be going one of those skin transformations.
Tropic Thunder?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see the thing about how the Sergeant Rock movie, they're considering having it take place in the future? The future?
What?
Yeah.
No, see, I could almost see it work if Sergeant Rock is not from the future. If he gets transported from, like, you know, World War II to the future.
They're going
to
do that? Bad.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's talk about, like...
ruining any idea of...
Here's what we do. We take this idea... And then we change one of the basic parts of it completely. This will take place in World War II.
When's Jonah Hex coming out?
I don't know.
Next year sometime, it should be.
They have Valentine's Day, I think.
It's okay, like it's a
number
good
one date
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, sure.
Couples but retreat.
They have to have been wrapped up with primary shooting on that.
Probably.
It's been a while ago.
They've been adding the face digitally.
Yeah, probably.
Or subtracting Tom.
Really? Or taking, I don't know, I made that up. They're just cutting out Megan Fox's lines.
Oh,
no. I don't want to tank the movie too bad.
All right, anybody see G.I. Joe?
Oh, no, I haven't yet.
It was horrible.
Was it bad?
It was terrible.
Was it fun bad, though?
No.
Just bad, bad.
Did you go in with expectations?
No, absolutely not. I don't.
He expected it to be bad, and lived up to it.
I mean, I was a bit of a fan of the cartoon. I've never really read the comics at all. So I didn't have a huge expectation at all. I mean,
enough roadblock.
I like the Transformers movies just because they're giant robots fighting. I don't expect a whole lot more from a movie that of giant robots fighting. Yeah. So I kind of went into it thinking it was going to be along the same lines of that. Really, no story and just a bunch. And it was, but it was not enough giant robots fighting in G.I. Joe for me to enjoy it, I think.
You kept waiting for the giant robots to show. The only thing that's going to save this movie
is the giant robot showing up right now. It would have.
And it didn't happen.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no wait fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Last night I thought about another life and what I do. This time.
I wanted to ask you, Patrick.
Yes.
With the promotion for some of the Blackest Night books, where they're giving out the rings that come with the books. Have you had a lot of people that picked up Doom Patrol just because they wanted the ring?
We had a significant increase in numbers of subscribers asked for Doom Patrol, and a handful of people buy it off the shelf. The problem is Doom Patrol is not a good book.
It's not the
best tie-in maneuver, but we ordered so much of the book in the rings that people can get the ring separately, and that's the way people are going. The ring promotion is a great idea. It gets people interested. It just so happens that we were doing our own promotion for the Green Lantern, Blackest Night stuff. We were making temporary tattoos, one a month for each Lantern Corps to coincide with an issue of Blackest Night. So we're halfway done with that. And, you know, if DC wants to do something else, too, that's cool. But, you know, everyone
thinks
it's
in the way of your promotion.
I know, but it's weird because people think the tattoos are every store. I'm like, no, this is just us. Mm-hmm. We started sharing it with a comic shop out in Orlando, like doing an extra run, and they're doing it as well because we like those guys and they do a lot of cool promotions. But the rings are a great idea, and it's really weird around the city. And, of course, no matter what it is, with the internet, everybody from every corner of the country is going to have their own stories about it. Some stores are doing it, you buy the ring, or buy the comic, get the ring free. Other people do just buy the ring or give them, or whatever. However, it's different stories. But so many people are saying that they don't have them, they can't find them, their stores don't have them. DC ran out. They're still available, and we have like 100 still. And we will for all of them. And most of the stores around the country probably still do. It's just the stores that don't, that didn't order high, that their customers are the ones saying, no, there are no more, they're super rare.
And they're not rare.
They're not rare. They're not rare.
DC, even in anticipation of this, it was a situation of, you know, order 25 comics, get 25 rings, or order 25 comics, get 50 rings, or order 50 and get 50. It was different per book. But at the last second, they doubled the number of rings you were going to get. So everybody got twice as many rings as they thought they were going to get. So if you're still running out with twice as many, maybe you should have ordered differently.
Yeah.
But this is an 8-month book. This is an 8-month promotion. So even though all the rings are just in November, the people will want the rings all the way through to the end of this and as it continues. And even in the future. How often? I mean,
Is it one ring a week? Or
it's two rings a week for each week in November. By the end of November, they're all going to be out.
Okay.
And DC was cool enough to send every store a set of all 8 at a time.
Mm-hmm. To promote it.
So what rings have come out so far?
So far, just Sinestro. The Black Ring and the Black Lanterns and Sinestro. And last week, see how I'm doing this from the future?
You son of a bitch.
It was Indigo and Orange.
Yeah, it was funny with I thought that Doom Patrol didn't use the opportunity to have a bunch of new people read it very well.
They did not.
I thought it was a weird timing.
It's issue 4.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do, hey, jump on now when you're in the middle of your first story arc.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was a little bit of a messed up as far as that. You know, I was like, oh, I don't know if anyone's going to read this.
Tom had the best ring quote on Twitter. I think you said
fits right over my wedding ring.
Yeah, and both instill great fear.
Both instill great fear, yeah. It's a nice sign. I think I got my ring in my bag.
I don't understand how Doom Patrol
can't be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you have like 17 X-Men books that have survived and done really well for, you know, 30 years. You can't get one decent Doom Patrol
book. Maybe it's because they're actually ugly.
Maybe.
Or two of them.
Yeah, if you think back, every hideous X-Man has been changed. Remember Marrow was this hideous creature, and then she became...
Comic book fans are so shallow.
Drop dead. Yeah, well, absolutely. look at Pixie. When Scotty was first doing new X-Men... And Pixie was just this young butterfly type kind of a freak.
Right.
Now she's gorgeous with pink hair and a killer Greg Land body.
Oh hell, go back to Mimic.
Yeah, right. I mean, there you go.
Sad.
With those glasses.
Sick fucks out there. Drive everything away.
Bastards.
They should have had a Metal Men lantern ring promotion. That would have been good.
Yeah, every different metal, absolutely. While there will be 8
Tom just nodding on that. That's awesome.
Can I get an orange ring?
Yeah. I just want to make sure. Don't you want all the orange rings? Because you're greedy.
It'd be good if DC only came out with one orange ring. Only one person. One store got the orange ring.
Has anybody seen the cereal parody where they use different cereal box mascots as the different lanterns?
No, I have not seen that.
God, I can't remember all of them, but Tony the Tiger, I think, was the Green Lantern. You had Toucan Sam. You had, I can't remember who was what
Lucky
though.
Lucky Charms guy.
Yeah. The Tricks Rabbit.
Count Chocula was the Black Lantern.
Of course.
No, I'm sorry. Quist was the Black Lantern. Count Chocula was the, I can't remember, but it was kind of neat.
The Brown Lantern.
The Brown.
It took a long time to figure out.
You know, the Brown Lantern.
But they're actually, there's heavy rumors of there being a ninth Lantern Corps that we don't know about.
Uh-huh. The White Lantern.
And, it's just a rumor.
It's
rumor.
Just speculation.
And I absolutely cannot confirm if they're going to be doing a ring promotion with that as well.
Well, interesting.
More rings.
Yeah.
And then another ring. And then another ring.
Black is Nice doing really well, it seems, from what I've heard.
Top four in sales.
I was actually at Club Lago over the weekend, and just a random bar patron had a really cool idea for if there is a White Lantern, which we don't know. Who it should be, and most people assume it's going to be Kyle, but somebody said it should be Don Hall. Because Hawk was, they couldn't corrupt Hawk. He was one of the rejected Black Lanterns. Like, his animated corpse would not.
Yeah.
Animate. Oh, wait. No, Dove from Hawk and Dove. Sorry.
Dove. Did I say Hawk?
Dove.
No, I did. I just said Hawk. Sorry.
Wait. What?
Sorry.
Hawk and Dove wasn't Dove.
Dove was
a
good
girl.
Well,
no, Dove is a girl now.
Currently, Dove's a girl.
Oh, the original Hawk and Dove was a dude? Mm-hmm.
Two dudes,
they were brothers.
Was it?
Yeah.
Hank and Don Hall.
Hank and Don Hall.
Is that like way back?
Yeah.
All right, Tom.
I only remember like the 80s Hawk and Dove.
All right. Muscly.
Tom?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah? All right.
Hank Hall, Don Hall. They're Halls.
Hall & Oates.
They're Halls.
Oh.
Yeah.
How are they related to Carter Hall?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Whenever it involves a Hawkman, just forget about it.
Yeah, just forget about it.
How about Dr.
Don't
Fate?
Even bother.
How about Airwave?
Isn't Airwave...
Hal Jordan.
They're like cousins.
But they have the same name, that's all.
Yeah. And they explained it away.
Airwave
they're both.
Hal Jordan. Not the Hal Jordan, a Hal Jordan.
Man,
the golden age.
That shit.
You're Hal Jordan. No, not that Hal Jordan.
And then they weirdly, I think, explained it away as even
You're
though he was
white
from
Green
Earth
Lantern?
2.
What?
The other
white
Hal Jordan.
Green Lantern. White Lantern.
John Stewart should be the White Lantern.
Now that would be cool.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
All in white.
You mean the Daily Show John Stewart,
look
right?
Good,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, not that John Stewart.
He
could
be political while he's fighting crime.
Funny.
Exactly. Go back and, for the speculation where that's coming from, pick up the Alan Moore Stories of the DC Universe.
That
and he did some...
Jeff Johns stole all of Blackest Night from.
A lot of it. Not
all
stole
of it.
Built,
it's all in there.
Built
all
upon
in
it.
There.
It's well, all actually, in the... What was the last issue of Blackest Night, they had the freaky alien dudes from that
Alan Bleeding Moore. Cool pulled it out as like if you look at it as a reaction to what Alan Moore said, that it's kind of funny when he says he's like, you didn't predict any of this stuff happening, you know. It's interesting. Yeah,
Alan will take credit for anything he can get his hands on.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about those two librarians that were fired over the I just read it today on
Weren't they fired for not allowing a kid?
There was a 11-year-old kid that wanted to take out of the library a copy of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think Black Dossier.
Okay.
And they had, before this kid even came and wanted it, these two librarians had decided that they were not going to allow anyone to take it out of the library. But they couldn't do it, you know, any sort of legal way. So they
anybody at all or anybody under
anyone
like
at all.
17?
They didn't want the book in the library, but they couldn't get it, you know, removed from the library. So what they did is they checked it out themselves. The one woman checked it out and held on to it for like 100 weeks.
That's
so like
fucking
two,
annoying.
You know, like 2 years.
Wow.
And so finally this girl who she could never seem, it was never at the library, she finally put it on hold. She's like, you know, when it comes in, I want it. And she put it on hold. So, so then something happened where it all came out that these two librarians were doing. There was two of them, and they would like go back and forth, like you hold on to it for. And they ended up getting fired because of it.
Well, I can absolutely understand somebody not letting a child check out a book for mature readers' reasons. There's plenty of books in this store that
to not allow anyone.
We don't let 11-year-olds have, but for anybody, that's
no.
See, when you said it was 11-year-olds, personally, I'm like, well, that I guess I can get on board with that. But.
And of all the Black Dossier, really?
I guess there was some sexual stuff in there that they didn't.
But like, are they doing that for every book that they have in the library?
Plus, all those English public domain literature characters, nobody wants to read about those. Oh man,
twisted.
But think of all the other books you probably have. Like, how many other books were they also checking out? So people,
They probably got it confused with Lost Girls.
Yeah. Somebody had,
you know what? You're probably comment, right. Mm-hmm.
There was a comment on the
probably didn't even read it
on the story, and it was like, well, you know, I appreciate the fact that it's an 11-year-old girl, but shouldn't we kind of look at the idea that, you know, that there are 11-year-old kids in libraries at all? Maybe that's more important than whether or not they read
Black We don't Dossier. Have the book you want. Go away.
Go what away. 11, what 11-year-old kid has turned onto the Black Dossier, though? That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And you figure she's probably 11. Read the first two. I mean,
at that point, you would think. I don't know.
Who knows?
It's always weird to me how often when a kid comes up with a book that feels inappropriate for their age group, and then with a parent, and you say, hey, you might want to look through this. Half the time, the parents look through and say, you're right, thank you, I'm going to put this back. Most of the time, you just go, no, it's cool, whatever they want.
They're reading.
Okay, yeah.
Whatever they want.
I mean, it's our job to point it out. It's our job, that's our job to stop them.
Right, to make a judgment call on them.
As a shop owner, what do you do if there's, you know, a 10-year-old kid comes in and wants to buy something without a guardian, without a parent or guardian, that is obviously way beyond what they should be?
We tell them that they not that they can't get it, but their mom or dad has to be with them when they get it.
Okay, that's cool.
They have to be able to, somebody has to sign off on it. And it could just be a bum they get off out the sidewalk out front who says, yeah, that looks good.
That's my son.
Like how we used to get beer.
Yeah.
Him buy this book and sell me some more Sterno.
I think I just found an extra avenue to make some money. I'm just going to hang outside your shop.
Hey, you want some Black Dossier, man?
You
want
to buy tarot?
You looking for tarot?
You want to buy tarot?
Alice in Wonderland?
While we have Dal next to us, I have a quick question. Wondermark-related question.
Okay.
That's art that he's found. That's all public domain, right? It's correct. He's not doing it himself. Everything has been reused.
It's all turn-of-the-century advertisement art, yeah.
Okay.
Turn-of-the-century.
Some of it we just weren't sure if he's been doing it for so long that he's been able to.
So don't worry. It was all made by artists that got screwed out of their original art.
They're all dead now anyway.
They're all dead.
Who cares?
Kirby did most of it.
We're going to go with it being David Malky. Malky's the way
David
to
say Malky.
It does have an exclamation mark at the end, so you do have
Malky!
To
Malky!
Tom!
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Dal.
What do you have there?
Another book I want to talk about was Assault on New Olympus, featuring Incredible Hercules versus The Amazing Spider-Man, written by Greg. There's a fight between Hercules and Spider-Man, written by Greg Pak.
Do they later team up?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Did you read it already?
Yeah, did you?
How did you know that?
Fred Van Lente with art by a man by the last name of Buscemi? Steve Buscemi?
Steve Buscemi?
Rodney. Rodney Buscemi.
His cousin.
I'm probably slaughtering it, but it was very interesting. I've really been enjoying Incredible Hercules, and that's just very
much. This also features the Agents of Atlas.
Yep, it's got Agents of Atlas backup.
They're everywhere. Is it written by Parker?
Yeah, it's Gabriel Hardman. Don't fold the cover, Chris. Jesus
Christ. I'm being careful with it.
God, that's a collectible.
Amateur.
You fucking amateur.
I think it was a great book. I think it was a lot of fun. Yeah. And it did follow immediately from the last issue of Incredible Hercules. But it should have just been the next issue of Incredible Hercules.
Yeah, that was
There's no reason to make it a one-shot standalone.
That was the only thing that I was like, what? Yeah.
I mean, we rack it right next to Hercules. It's not like we're going to like say, oh, you read Amazing Spider-Man, you got to get this issue.
They had all that crazy stuff with Incredible Hercules where it was coming out every 2 weeks. Yeah. And
then they were flipping it. This is an Amadeus Cho story, and this is Hercules.
I didn't even
story,
get the Amadeus Cho one, so I was
really?
Just like,
oh, too bad. Those were good.
Yeah, I'll probably get them at some point. But I was like, I don't want to buy Incredible Hercules twice, you know. Twice a month.
Some people still feel tricked that it was the Hulk that just transferred over the numbering, and now they're doing it twice a month.
You know, Gabe Hardman can draw the shit out of some gorilla man. That's all I'm saying.
I think you used that exact quote the last time I was on this program.
You can draw the shit out of gorilla man. Yeah, it was a very funny story. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy how Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente write Hercules.
They're having fun with it. They're a good team on that.
He's the perfect mix of like hubris and sort of common man, or at least he thinks he's a common man, you know, mixed with
he's
pretension.
The common man's god.
He's come a long really way good, from Bob Layton's comedic character of the 80s. But he's still entertaining.
I like the comedy because there is a funny part to Herc, but yeah, I think Tom kind of hit it. He's the common man's god. It's, you know, he's the god that's kind of
fun to be quite a tragic character.
He likes to party.
He does like, yeah, he likes to have a good time, and he's good in the sack apparently.
And he fights Spider-Man in this, so it
and then teams up.
Which, yeah, and then teams up.
Speaking of, because of you, Tom Caters, yeah. I came to Challengers this week and picked up this.
Mighty Avengers.
Yes.
Stupid bastard.
Which has Hercules in it. And you're right. It's very entertaining.
I told you you'd like that a lot. And I was right, 100%, like always.
I was thoroughly entertained. Yeah. And Hank, it's the first time I've ever said, ooh, Hank Pym is a cool character. I want to read more of him.
Or like, oh, or instead, it was the first time you ever reacted and didn't think, someone get Hank Pym off the panel immediately so we can get to somebody else as quickly as possible. Thank you.
And Quicksilver is hilarious in it because he's only in the team at this point. This is the first hardcover edition of Ursa Maydius.
Of Slot's Run,
yeah. And Quicksilver is only in the team because he wants to find Scarlet Witch. He's like, has absolutely no interest in being on this team.
Except for any other reason to be involved with it. But like I said, I guaranteed that you would like it, and it happened again. Cha-ching! Tom Caters guarantee!
Cha-ching, exactly.
Now, Chris, let me give you my advice, and don't get the next one, and just quit reading from there. Because now the book is terrible. The really? Art is awful.
Wow.
And yeah, do you the still art, enjoy it?
I'm still enjoying it, but the art hasn't been as good
as... It's the first time in I don't know how many years I quit buying an Avengers book.
It just really? Oh, that takes a lot. That's saying a lot.
Absolutely for me.
I'm still enjoying the story. I think it would help if they picked an artist. Because
the art is a huge, huge deal because it's not great. Sorry, Burnham. The art is not good.
It's switched around a lot. It was Sean Chen for an issue, and then it would go to somebody else, and then it was split.
It's in mainly between. Koi Pham.
Yeah. Who's not my favorite artist either. But
nor mine.
I'm still quite enjoying the story.
Yeah. Well, that
I got bored.
Well, that brings up another book is Fractions Iron Man. I picked up the
probably my favorite Marvel book right now.
The World's Most Wanted.
Oh my god, that story!
Great story.
So, that story just ended now.
Man, I love it, but the LaRocca art is hard for me to swallow.
Do you guys remember Sal LaRocca back in the day when he was actually doing full figure art and not on the computer and not with pencil thin line work and not letting the colorist do all the dimensionality and depth? Man, I miss that guy. Ever since Austin's X-Men, he's gone to this loose outline. It makes him faster, but yeah, I know other people who
his Iron share Man's your cool. His Iron Man is cool.
Tough part is when there's a face and you don't know who it is. Like if there's like a panel of someone, it's not even that. It's like you see a face of someone, and for a second you have to sit and think like, who is this that's talking? Because everyone kind of has the same. Like look to them a little
bit. Same structure, the same shape, face.
Or they might just have a mustache.
I really like Matt's writing on this, but there are times when Fraction has these. He's kind of like Ellis. He's got these really awesome big ideas and great great scope, but there are these emotional beats in the story that really need the artist to kind of come up to a level to really get that to resonate with you because. Some of those emotional moments are just a tad cheesy, and if the art wasn't equally as cheesy, it would have a lot more resonance with it. I don't know if LaRocca hits. It's like, but I really enjoyed the story. I love the idea of the story, and I liked it. But yeah, LaRocca is just that's the weak link of that.
When
book
for Tony
me.
Shaves and gets a haircut and changes his hair color. No idea it was him. So hard to follow along. I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, that's part of the problem, too, is you're like, wait, is that Tony?
But just the concept is so great, and I try to explain it to people, but it always sounds dumb trying to explain it. Well, he's deleting his brain because all this information he's got in his head, Osborn once again, so he's getting rid of it, and he's getting dumber. And oh, my God, it's done so well, but people just go, that's stupid. No, it's not really. No. My explanation is stupid.
Comic book ideas they sound stupid when you explain. You're right.
But he gets to go back and use all the different armor again too. That's so cool.
It's the first book that I've really liked Maria Hill as a character.
No offense, she's not written by Bendis anymore, and she has some personality and depth to her.
I didn't say that.
I think it's because you're not threatened by her any longer.
Chris can take her. She's been stripped of her authority, so now I can approach her a little.
I'm just saying. I don't know.
That was a fucked up story with her and the controller.
And the controller, right. And how great to... I mean, that's such a huge story on its own that they just kind of tuck to the side. Mm-hmm. You only get what you need to know from that story. It doesn't matter with the rest of it.
That actually, it kind of hurt reading that in trade because I think that the tension over the month,
little by little.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, okay, this took place over three issues, and that would have been like 3 months. I read it, you know, in 45 minutes, and that kind of, I think, hurt the tension level.
One of the most confusing things about that storyline to me was this was, I think, Marvel's sixth monthly book that had Black Widow doing something completely different.
She's everywhere.
Exactly. She's everywhere, and she's impersonating the blonde Black Widow in Thunderbolts, but she's captured in Captain America. And here and
this she's one, she's just kind of hanging out, like not doing anything.
Well, she's a secret agent. She can do that.
She's being secretive.
How have you read the new Black Widow comic? The one?
It's really good. Paul Cornell did.
Paul Cornell? Good? Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. Absolutely.
Cool.
I went into it thinking I was not going to like it. Then I'm like, oh, it's Paul Cornell. I forgot. And it was good. But touching one more thing on the Iron Man storyline is actually the next storyline, Stark Disassembled. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen the cover designs for those? Ryan Hughes is doing the cover designs, and it's different. Like, they're letting him completely redesign the Marvel books. And when Captain America Reborn came out with their numbering system in the really thin vertical barcode, I'm like, oh, they should do that for everything, and they didn't. Well, they're doing it with this, and it's got a very specific design scheme to... The oh man, it's so cool. The problem is they're doing it 50-50 covers with Patrick Zercher, so all the cool design elements of the Ryan Hughes ones are gone. But it's really, I thought for the first, I'm like, well, this is really Marvel stepping up their cover designs to the future.
I mean, I've really liked some of the cover stuff, like Secret Warriors. I've liked how they let Hickman design those and
stuff like that, for sure. Then you see what they're doing for Siege. Oh, it's like that, but instead of being horizontal, it's vertical.
Yeah.
But still, I do appreciate the design. You look at it right away and saying, oh, it's a crossover, it's part of it or whatever. Yeah. It's not just a bar across the top.
No, it's cool.
Yeah, but yeah, the Iron Man, when you see and it's very simple block text, Invincible Iron Man, but the designs are great. I fell in love with them.
Cool.
You gotta love a good cover.
You do. You really do. Especially nowadays when most covers don't relate or aren't done by the people who are actually doing the books.
Sometimes I completely don't even look at the covers.
It's a lot of that because of the amount of time for pre-orders and soliciting and all that.
They want to get them done in advance. But also, as any artist for Marvel who does a cover, Marvel gets to use their image three times, whether it be trade paperback or a poster or toy packaging or whatever. So they have to be generic enough to be able to use in different formats. And I miss having
You mean
a
this
cover
is
down.
Generic? It's Hercules and... Spider-Man coming
it's
through
an
a wall.
On a stone wall, yeah.
Well, not only that, and you have so much of the market is pre-orders, and people are ordering off of covers a lot of times, and a little bit of.
But the covers
text.
Don't even tell you what.
But not
about.
Savage Dragon. This happens in this issue.
I mean, you're selling it off a cover, so you get a bigger name artist to do the cover, and then you don't pay that same guy to
but
do the
But that doesn't
interiors.
Work so much anymore. I mean, from the retail side, people don't just buy a book because of the cover artist anymore. They
no,
stop
no,
doing that.
Not in a store, not, you know, walk-ups on, you know, come and buying in a store, but you still have a large portion of buyers that are buying it, you know, in advance. They're pre-ordering it.
That's true.
Through, you know, and that's, I think, a big part of it still.
Sure.
This happened.
I hate it. I can't stand
this
it.
This happened in Savage Dragon. I'm holding up Savage Dragon 154.
Savage
this
Dragon
scene, it all,
by a
whatever Eric Larson
dragon looking kind of
whatever Eric Larson draws on that cover.
That's
it happens.
Inside,
it happens
baby.
In that issue. Yeah. He knows.
Yeah, I did read another comic that I'd like to bring up briefly.
Garfield and Friends.
Garfield and Friends. No, Daredevil 501, the first issue of Andy Diggle. It was really good. I can't remember the artist's name. I don't have it in front of me.
Roberto De La Torre.
There you go.
Roberto De La Torre.
You run a comic shop,
who's
don't
doing
you?
It? I read Daredevil. He's doing a completely different style. He's doing his best cross between Maliv and Michael Lark.
Yes. I got to say, you know,
He did Invincible Iron Man for a while. He did Ms. Marvel. He was their go-to mainstream superhero guy. When I heard he's doing Daredevil, I'm like, oh, it's going to be awful. But
it's
totally
really good.
Different.
Yeah.
Very, very grim. Very,
yeah, very, very Alex Maleev, Michael Lark. And I got to say, as much as I like Michael Lark, I didn't love his work on Daredevil. I have to say the same about Brubaker, quite honestly, is I didn't love his work on Daryl. I loved the when he started.
When he started, it was amazing.
That first story arc,
great. Then the second story arc was bam. Right,
you know where it lost me? When he went to France.
That's it. He dug himself out of that hole, but he never got to the level he was at.
Thank you, Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. Part of it was Civil War.
We got to get him out of the country.
But and honestly, it's like I've been reading Daredevil for so long that after all these stories and it's sort of after the whole Brubaker thing, I was like, well, maybe I'm just tired of reading Daredevil. And then I read that issue and I was like, oh, thank you, Andy Diggle. It's kind of a whole new Daredevil. And it was a really good issue, and I'm really looking forward
to it. How crazy is it that the Hand have remodeled their outfits to look like little Daredevil?
They look awesome,
minions,
though. Yeah. The Devil's Hand outfits are kick ass.
Do they call themselves the Devil's Hand? That's awesome.
I don't know. That's what I've been calling them.
They don't use that in the book. That is
great.
Well,
they should certainly be called the Devil's Hand.
Let's trademark it. Trademark that shit.
Yeah, that's two for tonight. What did you say over there before that we were going to copyright as well?
Pop Rock. Pop Rock.
No, Brit Rock.
And yeah, Devil's Hand. Yeah, you know what? I don't think they do call it, but that's what I called it.
Devil's Hand.
It's Devil's Hand. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen.
Andy Diggle is a good writer, and we've said it for 4 years now.
Yeah,
maybe four.
So pay attention. We've been saying it for 4 years.
We're not going to say it again.
Before the movie comes out, go out. Get those trades of the Losers. Read that series.
I still have not read The Losers.
Oh, it's jock artwork. Andy Diggle.
It's a lot of fun. It really is.
It's a great
I got
great
Beards
series.
Of Our Forefathers to read, man. Come on.
I got beard shit to write.
Ooh, you want
to
talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
I'll talk about this with you.
I want to segue perfectly into that because I love that cover. Chrissy.
I will tell you. Yeah,
can't remember her last name.
Talking about covers. And
Cinderella from Fabletown.
Chrissy Zulo?
Oh, new Fabletown.
That cover. And is it the on covers you? That she's perfect for that book. For the Fables universe, we're talking about Cinderella from Fabletown with Love. And I think that cover is great. And
it's awesome.
It's super. Oh, man. It's so much fun. She certainly fits within the James Jean Milo of Fables cover artists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And whoever's doing the Fable covers now are also equally as good.
It's been a staple of that series. And the cover for Cinderella, number one, from Fabletown with Love.
You guys love covers.
That's the only reason. That's an awesome cover.
And this goes against everything I just said about, the interiors aren't the same as the outside, but Vertigo has a long tradition of having covers by different people. And at least they have the cover artist will do the whole book. It's not like, oh, well, Hercules has a different cover every issue.
The only thing I would say about this cover is I wouldn't recognize that as the same Cinderella from the Fables book.
You're not supposed to. You're actually, as you go through, there's a bunch of...
she's a spy. She's in disguise.
She shows the different aspects.
The only thing
that bugged me about the book is that I didn't know going into that it's a story from the past.
That's fine because I'm not caught up on Fables, so you don't
finally.
Are you finally caught
finally up? Finally caught up on Fables and Jack and Fables.
Okay, then I won't tell you how I know that it's a story from the past.
No spoilers.
No spoilers, please. Tom, did you enjoy Cinderella number one?
Oh, I did enjoy quite a
Chris
bit.
Chris Robertson, who has been writing some House of Mystery. He wrote the Neil Adams drawn story in House of Mystery.
Meet the Robertson.
Yeah, I can't say that I love the other stuff that he wrote before that I've read, but I thought this was really, it was quite good. But I it's sort of based really on how awesome the Fables universe is that when you can pick these characters.
Such a great character. Yeah. There's my good friend Guido. The first time the first day we were open at Challengers, he came in. He's like, "Just what should I get?" I'm like, "Here, get Fables." And it was the Cinderella two parter where she was rescuing Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And he came back like, "This is fantastic." And he'd fallen off comics. He just came in because it was us.
Well, Tony Akins loves that character.
What a badass she is.
Yeah. Yeah, for Queen and Country fans, Cinderella is Tara Chase in the Fable universe.
That works.
I think there's really many
Queen and Country
fans more than Fable fans.
But she also has to pretend to be stupid.
So Fable fans, read Queen and Country because Tara Chase is Cinderella.
She doesn't have to.
Well, come on, man.
Oh, I know.
I'm talking to my people.
Okay.
I don't think she's too related to Lara Croft.
Well,
I can't even name any personality traits of Lara Croft. Besides, the same. Women are all the same. They're all the same. But yeah, I mean, it's a real testament to how strong the Fables universe is that you can pluck any of the individual characters out and do a fun story that has a different feel, you know, from the other Fables books. And that's always been one of the cool things about Fables is at its strongest, it's when it's like, okay, let's switch it up and make it a story
about something this. Else. Yeah. A whole different kind of fable, a whole different aspect.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that this was an ongoing.
It's not.
It's a mini.
No. And that's what, you know, the setup for the story is that, you know, Cinderella is the spy of Fabletown. She has a secret identity. She's a secret agent, and there are fable artifacts that are being trafficked between worlds.
The Mundy world and the fable world
and
the homelands.
And they, you know, to protect their security, to, you know, protect the secrecy of the fable universe, they need to track down and find out who is trafficking these fable artifacts, and so this is a job for Cinderella.
Do you think they purposely said it in the past because they know everyone freaks out about getting spoilers about what happens
probably.
In Fables?
And yeah, like, I guess, because Fables does have more readers in trade. That does make sense. Jack of Fables does not sell anywhere near as well as Fables does, but this has the potential to do so. And I love Jack. So. And if they do Cinderella with Tony Akins, bam, everyone's happy.
You know what I think holds back?
I don't think he wants to leave Jack anytime soon.
He's not on Jack. It's Russell Braun who's doing Jack.
Well, he's taking a break.
They switch between them. I know it's always I think the problem with Jack of Fables sometimes with certain fans is that they don't like the humor aspect to it.
Well, everyone says Jack is such a jerk. Yeah, I know. That's
the point of the book. He's an egotistical asshole.
He doesn't get away with everything.
Yeah, it's great. But I mean, you always see that. I think that's always a pitfall of a lot of fandom is humor seems to put them off of things if something's a little too funny. It's too if it's like serious, a little too damn. Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit of a like, oh, this is too jokey.
Well, you know, sometimes it's not just, you know, someone's brand of humor.
I laugh enough in life. I don't need
Yeah, exactly. My life is so fucking happy. I don't
laugh
stand.
Enough in life.
I read Jack of Fables.
you laugh on the inside.
I laugh all day.
And Sean McManus does a good job of changing up his style. He's a little rougher, a little edgier. He's not as caricatured as he used to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't looking for him to change his style, but he does.
Yeah, it's Fables art.
And Puss in Boots is in it.
Puss in Boots is in it.
Hey.
It's pretty sweet. Just sauntering around. See, that's a great
puss.
Just a page. Just walking
that's a
around.
Sweet puss.
Yeah, just some sweet puss.
Look at that spread right there.
Look at this sweet puss.
Inviting.
Oh, yeah.
In boots.
This show's gotten creepy.
Yes, it has. Thank you.
Sweet puss.
And done my job.
There you go. You brought us low.
That's right.
You cut us down. Like you always
say. So does anybody have anything else?
Not me, sir.
Man, we're freewheeling at this point.
That was an effort, just that.
I just want to thank all you guys for having come to our art show last weekend. It was a huge success.
Awesome, and I bought a piece.
We raised a ton of money for the Hero Initiative.
Nice.
We're doing pretty well. We did, when we had Jill Thompson here for a PAWS Chicago benefit, we raised $600 for them.
Oh, that's awesome.
And while the final tally isn't in for the Hero Initiative, I'm pretty sure we raised more than that.
Well, you talk about the art show, and for folks out there, especially in the Chicago area, check out Challenger's website. Just you can search Challenger's Comics.
ChallengersComics.com.
ChallengersComics.com. And you guys have events monthly. I mean,
Almost too many.
Yeah, you're doing book clubs.
Who do you think you are?
Signings. You've got this art show.
I don't know.
Show.
That's why we do this. I'm trying to find out, Tom.
Well, you talk about this art show.
Are you my dad?
And I was like, so why are you guys unloading all this art? Because I know you've been in the industry for a long time. You've been selling comics
next
for
year
a long
will be
time.
My 20th anniversary.
Wow.
And with the party we're going to have for that, it's
nice.
Already on the books, man.
We call that party Windy City Comic Con.
It corresponds to the same time frame too, because it'll be August. Mm-hmm. Well, that's my anniversary.
Oh, okay, all right. But I mean, you've been collecting comic art for a long time.
Yeah.
Why are you parting, or why did you part with some of this stuff?
Well, it's for a good cause, but there are things we want to do related to art that I don't know if I can actually talk about just yet. But we do have much bigger plans with Challengers and the comic art collecting scene. There's more we plan to do with people, for people, and by people.
Mm-hmm. It's about people.
And this is an effort to raise some money to that regard.
Okay. You just weren't sick of a lot of this stuff sitting around your house.
No, you can't be sick of it. I mean, it's sad because there's so much of it you can't look at Elwood every day.
Yeah.
But Stephen Alan Payne from Tomorrow's wrote a book called Grail Pages, and it was all about collectors of original comic art and their favorite collections and their favorite pieces. And Stephen himself found – like he just happened to backdoor his way into being an art dealer because he bought stuff that he liked a lot, then – was on some hard financial times and sold it and made a lot of money. Then he just started buying and selling. And he came and he did a signing for us. And the pages that he's bought and sold, it's just mind-blowing. Because he's mainly like a 70s, Silver Age and 70s kind of guy. And the stuff that he – and now he doesn't even keep the stuff anymore. He just – buys it to resell it and just to broker
it's like
it around.
Buying and selling houses. Own that $12 million house for a day.
I flipped that page.
Yeah. Exactly.
I flipped that page.
And so for someone like him, it's all in like, well, I did own it at a certain point. And once you actually own a comic store, it's a lot easier to have all those things at your house at your store. For example, a bunch of Captain America shields that you may have had hanging up in your home. And then you figure there's a better place for them. Mm-hmm. And it's easier because technically, all the stuff is mine now anyway, so it's easy to part with it and bring it in and to share the joy.
That's your life. You're trying to sell everything you own every day.
Live a piece of my soul every day.
How much do you want for this?
But comics is an American art form. It's one of the few original things that we can lay claim to.
Jazz, baseball,
wrestling,
and the American comic book.
Wrestling.
This kind of wrestling. No, not like Olympic wrestling, but...
That would be man's oldest sport. Thank you very much.
Pro wrestling.
No, I've said it for years. Jazz, baseball, and the American comic book are the three mostly American inclusions into modern society. Absolutely.
And hedge funds.
Comic art is such a viable form of art. I mean, it's real. It's art. It exists. It should be... respected and studied, and it also is not becoming extinct, but becoming extinct in the forms that we know it. There is no more ink. The ink on paper doesn't quite exist in the same capacity anymore, and all this art that exists is going to get rarer and rarer.
Sure. I mean, even now, it's near impossible to find new pages that are not even hand lettered, but have lettering.
Yeah, absolutely,
on them.
Absolutely, or even filled in blacks. Or
I've got a
black spaces. That would be.
I've got an Andy Parks Phil Hester page. So do you that has the lettering.
You
on
co-own
the page.
It. You no, guys co-own it. You bought a page.
He bought a page at the same time. And one of the reasons that it was so
opposite
cool.
Panels.
Oh, we nice. I have every third weekend and but no,
I have no affiliation with Andy Parks whatsoever other than.
It was cool, friendship. But these pages that we bought from their Green Lantern run, they have lettering on the page, and it's hard to find that now. And it's cool. That's part of it.
That absolutely is a cool part of it. And I love seeing mistakes or whiteout or lines in the margin or notes that say, you know, colors make this red or it's nighttime or
I bought at this at
quit
your,
fucking
at,
up Jack
at your Mike Norton had I bought a page from him that says replace these headlines. There were some newspapers that were spread out and says, you know, hey, replace these headlines.
Yeah.
But the page I bought at your art sale was really cool because there was an entire panel that was on the original page, but then I guess for whatever reason they decided to change the panel, and so the page that I bought came with an extra panel.
Raphael Albuquerque made a whole separate panel to be digitally included later.
Yeah, so it's like this whole different panel, so I got to find another damn frame for that.
Well, I'm a big fan of David Lafuente, especially when he was doing Hellcat for Marvel. Now he's doing Ultimate Spider-Man. He doesn't draw pages. He draws panels on different pieces of paper and then just puts them all together digitally. So when you go to buy his art, it's super cheap because you're like $35 for a panel.
Wow.
You get a panel of art, you know, depending on how big the panels are,
like
the price
that.
Changes. But it was really neat. And the panel that I bought of his, it was great because he's got all these doodles in the margins and he's got like cover mock-up sketches ideas, and that's the stuff that I love. That stuff you don't get to see.
The process stuff.
The process, exactly.
And more, it's like Freddie Williams. He is
completely digital,
100% digital. And I, you know, he does it for a speed trade-off. It's like he can crank out more pages.
And, you absolutely can.
You know, but you lose your aftermarket of selling your, you know, selling your original art. But
that's true. That's but most of these guys just think about the deadline as they're doing it, and the aftermarket is just a bonus.
Yeah, yeah, because not every page is a premium page, but it's interesting because I think more people are going to become more and more digital all the time. I think at some point you're going to get something original on paper because it does have some value.
Absolutely.
You know, somewhere that it's like, no, this wasn't digitally reproduced. It's going to make
convention sketches more exciting too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think the fact that the original art market's going to change is going to affect how issues of comic books look? You know, like there's always the tension between, obviously there's times when a writer puts something in so the artist can draw a full page, a splash page.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a $600 sale for you.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good point.
Also known as the image years.
Yeah, like when that starts to go away a little bit, and there isn't quite that same, like, not pressure, but like obviously at times it's like, oh, you know, let's put here's something that, a full page, you know, thing that you can sell go later wild. At some point. Yeah, go wild on it.
Or when artists would do that themselves anyway. When
they just elect to do a full page.
Oh, I think a double page spread fits here.
Yeah, if you don't have that, and maybe in a few years you'll see how people approach it rather
than the process of actually creating the page. I think the delivery system will change that. I think that you'll see pages designed. I think you'll see fewer double page spreads because of the
binding in a trade paperback. You can't open that as flat, you don't see as well.
Binding, I think, more in how it's viewed digitally. And I think that is going to have an effect more than the process of it. But, you know, I'm not an artist, so I probably can't speak to that. But I think delivery system will have a little bit more of an impact in that. You may see more, you know, half page and full page because it looks better on a viewer.
I don't think you're right.
Well, the whole industry will be done in 10 years anyway. There won't be anything produced, so it won't matter.
Comics will never die.
The whole point of our show was to see if Chicago is receptive enough for this kind of thing to happen on a regular basis.
And
we have big plans starting in June of next year with a pretty big name creator who I'm not going to say right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. Alex Ross.
No.
Challengers Art Gallery.
There was that awesome Alex Ross page we were showing.
No, that's cool.
From Justice. Absolutely. Yeah, it was great.
How much did that go for?
That was not for sale. Oh. That was just to show. Teaser. Yeah, sorry.
This is the type of stuff you could get.
You possibly.
Anybody who wants any Alex art needs to contact Sal Avenatti.
Yep.
And get it from him.
That bastard.
But yeah, I'd never seen an Alex Ross page up close. And
pretty.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You saw it hanging on the wall.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
I got to frame it.
Right next to my page that says "Soul."
This time warp thing we're fucking dealing with.
am I still alive? What happened?
Yeah. Well, you are, but you're divorced.
Oh my God! What happened?
I was in Carbondale all weekend, so we don't know. All right,
I feel really bad for missing their art show. That's all I could think is
step through time. Yeah,
let's wrap this one up. I'm freewheeling. No notes tonight. So Tom versus the Flash twice a week.
Yep.
As Tom runs you through history of the DC
universe. Do you know when you're going to be finished already? Like, do you have a timeline?
I'm at 243, so a year?
Really?
Wow. I'm going to do two a week to get through another 100. That's 50 weeks.
And then it's Tom versus Plastic Man?
Tom not doing anything for
Tom
him.
Versus the All-New
Flash. I'm still waiting for Tom versus Aquaman.
It'll be Aquaman.
It will be Aquaman.
Really? Yeah.
Of course,
Aquaman's awesome.
Okay, I wasn't.
Sal, you are the one that's lame.
You're the one. No, I was hoping for Doom Patrol, but Tom versus the Metal Men would be awesome. But that's just
that
me.
One's a little too visual.
Yeah,
it's too tough to do.
Aquaman would be awesome.
Some of those old Aquaman issues, he gets up to some crazy shit. He can't just settle for fighting people underwater, even though he would have plenty of time. There's plenty of crime going on, people robbing shit, but now he's gotta figure some way to get on land.
Well, you know.
And bring his octopuses with him in a big glass tank. Call somebody else to take care of it. You don't have to. You don't have to fight all the
crime. I look for it. Yeah. Maybe I will change my whole opinion of Aquaman after that.
And Patrick, challengerscomics.com. Correct. If you're in the Chicago area,
please stop by.
Great website.
The website is amazing. There's so many neat things that we're still discovering them all the time.
It's a great website and an even greater comic book shop. Seriously, if you're in the Chicago area, and I actually have a lot of people that will email me if they're coming into Chicago for a long weekend or in on business, and they're like, hey, where's a good shop to check out? And I always tell them it's Comic Vault. It's super easy to go to the Comic Vault. No, it's super easy to go to Challengers Comics. It's Western Avenue, right off the blue line at the Western stop. It's a part of a great neighborhood. So come into Challengers Comics.
Do you remember when people missed having Sal around?
Do I remember that?
Sal,
you're actually doing some stuff. You have My Rotten Blog.
And
My Rotten Podcast.
Yeah, I do.
Have you quit that podcast yet?
No, I've... I've slowed down.
Are you a guest on your own?
I actually have a bunch of stuff planned for it, but this month I've just slowed down because I'm working on something else. But there's no schedule to it. I'm not tied to some sort of arbitrary weekly, you know.
All right. Our childlike obsession.
I need to come out every Monday kind of podcast.
I have some, you know, other things that take up my time.
You've been writing? How's the novel coming?
Slow, but it's, you know, it's fun.
What's the goal for November? What's the...
50,000 words. I'm way behind right now. I shouldn't even be here. I should be at home writing, but... Yeah.
Now, this is 50,000 unique words. Like, you only use each one one time, right?
Well, no. I think you can use...
I can't use the one right away. Keeping that one on hold.
I don't know that I'll make the... I probably won't make the 50,000 word cutoff by the end of November, but it's just something to keep me writing every day, and I have been writing every day, so that's been interesting, and... just sort of getting rid of
In fact, today he's going to write today. Huge waste of time.
No. Keep that internal editor at bay a little bit. Just write and don't worry about, you know, if it's shit, because it probably is, and not worry about it.
Yep. But, yeah. That's right. Writer's right.
I got something.
It's national shitty novel writing.
It's national crappy novel
shitty
writing.
Novels. Yeah, what's a shitty novel? What's that?
Well, the whole point is if you can get it done... and written, then you can always make it better. But the hard part is just getting it written. And I think a lot of writers, myself, I've always been... it's really been easy to make excuses not to write, whether it's trying to research or developing
this
a plot.
This forces you
or,
to get words on paper.
Yeah, it's just sit and write and nothing else. And if you can get that done, then go back and if it's got any merit whatsoever, go back and edit it and rewrite it and make it better. But get that first draft, you know, just written.
All right. What's the website for people that are interested in that writing project?
It's NaNoWriMo, NaNoWriMo.org. And you can National maybe get Novel Writing Month.
And get
and you don't have to do it in November. That's just when they do it. Mm-hmm.
You can follow the template.
You can do it whenever you want.
I actually thought the NO stood for November. November Writing Month.
That's I thought it was a Japanese kids show. I don't know. I kept seeing people say NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo.
It's all just a scam.
He kept having seizures
books,
as well when he'd see that. Drop to the ground.
Yeah, that's about it.
All right.
I got something else planned for Around Comics listeners. Oh, no.
When are you gonna do that?
It should have already been out by the time this comes out.
Okay.
I was gonna do it this week.
Okay, so people have already heard
beep beep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was great, Sal.
Thanks.
I was surprised by how graphic it was.
I want more of those.
I'm gonna try. Actually, I think I'm gonna try the next one. I want to do is with Joe Kelly. I want to talk about the little girl.
I Kill Giants.
Yes.
Awesome. Yes.
I'd love to do
which
I
is
Kill
the
Giants
January
Chattinger's
book, Click of the Month.
That's awesome. Yeah. More of those because that's
so. If I can get a hold of Joe Kelly, maybe I can. Yeah. I can squeeze Scotty to.
Hey, if we can get beep beep to come in here and sit down with us, then, you know, I mean, come on.
I'll be back.
Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly is a script editor on How I Met Your Mother, so he's got a steady full-time job.
I'm only asking for 20 minutes
of
his time.
But I'm saying, that's more reason to talk to him because that's a great show.
Oh, yeah.
But no, Sal only talks about the book. The book.
I don't talk about it.
He doesn't talk shit about anything else.
Well, no, at the end of it, I'll talk to them about what they're working on. But it's just the
sounds one like book. You're compromising.
I'm making them compromise to
you know,
me.
If you talk to them about bullshit,
I just want to talk about one book. And that's it. Their one book.
If you talk to them all about I Killed Giants, it's going to be a really sad podcast.
That's okay. No, it's an uplifting story.
Well, I know, but why he wrote it and what it meant in his personal life and that kind of stuff. Well,
yeah, but I'm not afraid of sadness.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can also
see a tagline. I'm not afraid of sadness.
But I do have some stuff planned for My Rotten Podcast. Hopefully soon, once November's over. And
My Rotten Podcast. Don't be afraid of sadness.
Don't be afraid of sadness. Yeah. Never fear sadness.
All right. And you can hear sadness more of me on 11 o'clock comics. I'll be back. I'll be back this week.
Took a week off.
All right. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Sal. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between times.
Thank you.
You gave up this, right?
We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Sacky forgets his line.
Around sadness. We just talk about sad shit.
Sadness. I'd like sadness.
Is another chicken.
Expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.